99.5 FM, WBAI, listener-sponsored, commercial-free community radio, trying to manage the clock here at this 5 o'clock hour. Stay tuned for Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. The WBAI Evening News follows at 6 p.m. Please stay tuned.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, December 31st, 2002. A brass-knuckled quest for information. In an understated way, that's how Washington Post staff writers Dana Priest and Barton Gellman began an explosive article on U.S. torture of prisoners at the U.S.-occupied Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan. Without restraint, torture, assassination, and the lethal nature of class rule. That is Taking Aim for December 31st, 2002, the last day of this year. Happy New Year to all of you, and we hope you enjoy our show. This is 1 year of Taking Aim. And so, without restraint, torture, assassination, and the lethal nature of class rule.
What's interesting about the Washington Post article, Maya, is that every euphemism is deployed. The U.S. decries abuse, but defends interrogation. Stress and duress tactics used on suspects held in secret overseas facilities. The language is opaque. None dare call it torture, but torture it is.
As they say, those who refuse to cooperate inside the secret CIA interrogation center are sometimes kept standing or kneeling for hours in black hoods or spray-painted goggles. And this they got, according to intelligence specialists familiar with CIA interrogation methods. Now, the Washington Post questioned and talked to many intelligence experts, people who had been involved in the CIA interrogation centers in Bagram Air Base and in other interrogation centers, because not only in Afghanistan, in Diego Garcia, and in other places throughout the world, the CIA has been torturing what they use as standard interrogation methods. Now, over the months, you have heard us talk about these interrogation methods as the standard practice of the Israelis against the Palestinians. Hoods, keeping people standing, making sure that they can't sit or sleep, depriving them of food.
Maya, that's the little beginning, as we have documented in the hidden history of Zionism, because that torture, which is emulated by the Central Intelligence Agency, includes all the most horrendous techniques of mutilation, of destruction of genitalia, forcing ballpoint pens into the urethra of men and women. These are the proceedings that are euphemistically called methods of interrogation. They are fiendish tortures, and they are the standard methods through which the targets of the ruling class are tormented in every corner of the world, including inside these national frontiers of ours in the United States.
And the standard techniques taught at the School of the Americas and utilized throughout Latin America. And the Washington Post, though, in this sanitized version of the actual torture, does expose that prisoners are thrown against the walls of the cells, that they are brutalized before they are even interrogated.
They are
softening up.
They are held in awkward, painful positions for days. They are deprived of sleep with 24-hour-a-day bombardment of lights. subject to what is called stress and duress techniques. Yes, ma'am.
As one official said, quote, if you don't violate someone's human rights some of the time, you probably aren't doing your job. Ralph, go on with more of the job.
Well, the job involves use of every form of physical and psychological torment and terrorizing of the victim person. They are held with goggles over their eyes, hoods over their heads. They are deprived of oxygen. They are subjected to noise to the point where it bursts the eardrums. They are disoriented with electrical impulses. They are subjected to the kind of abuse that is barely tolerable by any physically and mentally by any human being. And as you say, the CIA states categorically, we don't want to promote zero tolerance on this. We have to do the job of violating human rights to obtain information. They say this explicitly. The intelligence agencies, furthermore, are very clear that when they have finished their torment of the prisoners, they then turn them over to foreign intelligence services, specifically the Washington Post tells us, those of Jordan, Egypt, Morocco, and Israel, with a list of further questions that the Central Intelligence Agency wants and answered. These, quote, extraordinary renditions, unquote, are done without resort to legal process, involving countries with security services known for using brutal means, that is to say, yet more brutal than those already imposed and inflicted by the Central Intelligence Agency. The article tells us that over 3,000 suspected terrorists and their supporters have been detained worldwide. 625 are at the United States facility at Guantanamo Bay, but officials estimate that thousands more have been arrested and held with U.S. assistance in countries known for particularly, and I'm still quoting, brutal treatment of prisoners. Torture has been institutionalized, and the Central Intelligence Agency Counterterrorist Center Director stated, "This is a highly classified area. I have said all that you need to know. There was a before 9/11, and there was an after 9/11. All the gloves came off." And he's implying now, it reminds me, Maya, of the story about Adolf Hitler after the Normandy invasion. When Hitler met with his general staff, and when he learned that the Allied troops had landed in Normandy and were making advances, he slammed his fist on the table. He says, "All right, no more Mr. Nice Guy." The Central Intelligence Agency is leading us to believe that now, since 9/11, it's no more Mr. Nice Guy. They have been tormenting and torturing with mind control devices and physical torment for the past half century in and out of the United States. We will talk in a moment about that record in Vietnam, not to mention during the Korean War itself.
This was a front page article in the Washington Post. But it is rare for the Washington Post to be exposing what they euphemistically call stress and duress tactics.
And here it is, Maya. No ambiguity about it. Quote, "We don't kick the shit out of them. We send them to other countries so they kick the shit out of them for us." I'm quoting direct from the Washington Post, you monitors of our radio broadcasting. Some countries are known to use mind-altering drugs, said other officials involved in the process. Of course, it is under our direction. Abu Zubaydah, who was one of those accused of being a member of Al-Qaeda, was shot in the groin, and after shooting him in the groin, they deprived him of painkillers, the pain being excruciating, as a method of interrogation, the Washington Post informs us. Other U.S. government officials, speaking on condition of anonymity, acknowledge that American Central Intelligence and other intelligence agency interrogators deprive captives of sleep on a prolonged basis. And the U.N. High Commissioner for Human Rights, the authoritative interpreter of the International Convention Against Torture, ruled that these lengthy interrogations with sleep deprivation are the classic institute of what constitutes torture. And that's a quote.
Now, this starts immediately upon apprehension. As the Washington Post, in this December 26th article, notes, the U.S., quote, takedown teams are a mix of special forces, FBI agents, CIA case officers, and so-called local allies, and that they aim to disorient and intimidate their prisoners on the way to the detention facilities.
These overseas facilities, Maya, are off-limits to outsiders, and they, as the Washington Post tells us, they are even off-limit other government agencies. In addition to Bagram and Diego Garcia, the article states the CIA has multiple other secret detention centers and uses the facilities as well of foreign intelligence services across the globe.
So what do these takedown teams do? According to the people interviewed by the Washington Post, and as I mentioned before, they interviewed a lot of people, they are, quote, softened up by the MPs and the U.S. Army Special Forces, who beat them and confine them in tiny rooms. And as Ralph mentioned before, they're blindfolded, they're thrown into the walls, they're bound in painful positions, they're subjected to loud noises and deprived of sleep. So softening up, we know what that means. They're used as punching bags.
Miley stated as follows, free from the scrutiny of military lawyers, the CIA and its intelligence service allies have the leeway to exert physical and psychological techniques that result in death or collaboration, said national security officials and U.S. and European intelligence officers. The prisoners are denied access not only to lawyers, but any such organizations as the Red Cross who could independently evaluate this treatment. Even their names are a secret. And the U.S. military announced that at the U.S. custody base at Bagram, autopsies found the detainees dead of pulmonary embolism, the others of heart attacks, these sustained during these euphemistically described interrogations.
Well,
these people are being tortured to death.
We know from cases of people who die in U.S. prisons and under police custody that to say a pulmonary embolism or a heart attack is a euphemism, because it's what caused that pulmonary embolism and what caused the heart attack that's really at issue.
Now, let's look at the way the Bush administration and national security official who spoke to the Washington Post responded to the information that the Washington Post presented to them. Our guys kicked them around a bit, the national security officials stated. Scrupulous in providing a deadpan voice, he stated, pain control is a very subjective thing, unquote. No beating around the bush. These are people, if you'll forgive the pun, these are people who are taking responsibility for the elements of physical and psychological torture across the board, wherever people are detained. And what's also instructive about this is that the identity of these people never being disclosed, the basis on which they are detained is equally secret. There is no basis that anybody has any opportunity to scrutinize. There is no recourse. There is no defense of the rights of individuals. There is no opportunity to confront your accuser. There is no opportunity to respond to that of which they are putatively accused. Indeed, what it is a terror tactic to round up any opposition to U.S. policy and to create a climate of total fear in the surrounding population.
Now, in addition to this Washington Post article of December 26th and the summaries that have appeared, particularly in the foreign press, more so than in the U.S. press, I found this website called www.cooperativeresearch.org, and on it they have an excellent outline of rendition. Rendition means turning over the prisoners to other countries such as Morocco or Jordan or Egypt.
Or Saudi Arabia.
Or Saudi Arabia.
Or Israel, for that matter.
Right, where the torture is done under the auspices of the intelligence agencies in those countries, and who... sometimes with CIA officials looking on. And
well, Maya, it's not just sometimes. Listen to this. The interrogations in Saudi Arabia were observed through one-way mirrors, said a senior U.S. official. We get the summaries and we feed the questions to the investigators. They're in control. And Tenet acknowledged the Saudi role in this regard in a speech on December 11th. And the same was true of Egypt. And the article states, Jordan is a favored country for these renditions. The Jordanians are highly professional in their interrogations. But the State Department's own 2001 Human Rights Report described Jordan and its General Intelligence Directorate as specialists in arbitrary and unlawful detentions and torture. The methods involved are not only sleep deprivation, but prolonged beatings on the soles of the feet, prolonged suspension with ropes from tied to limbs in contorted positions, extended solitary confinement where hoods are over the head and breathing is near impossible, and furthermore, the 2001 report that the techniques that the Central Intelligence Agency is overseeing involves the use of the family members of these prisoners who are tortured in the presence of the suspect to induce them to talk. These are the methods of the fascist state. They are now being openly acknowledged. They are now being defended. They are now being institutionalized. They are now being presented as the elements of the ruling class's rule and the state apparatus on a permanent basis.
Incidentally, those are the very same methods that President Bush cited in his report to the United Nations as being the practice in Iraq and as a reason for the invasion of Iraq. So here we have the acknowledgement of the U.S. Employing the very same methods. Now, the countries for rendition, that these are just a few of the countries, the ones that have been exposed, both in this Washington Post article and also in a prior article that appeared in the Washington Post earlier this year on March 20th. And they are Egypt, Jordan, Nigeria, the Philippines, Kenya, South Africa, Morocco, Syria, Pakistan, Turkey, and as Ralph mentioned before, Israel.
Here's
now,
the State Department.
Ralph, let me just to refer people again to the cooperativeresearch.org, and it's an incredible outline that goes into the examples, particularly from this article, of interrogation and torture, rendition, the international laws against the use of torture, the response of the U.S. officials, observations, and a whole series of articles that are reported on this report. Noteworthy is that the New York Times had no mention of this revelation.
Maya, the State Department Human Rights Report describes the Moroccans in the following terms. They have a documented history of torture as well as long-standing ties to the Central Intelligence Agency, and they are now one of the favored interrogation services, torture apparatuses that on which the CIA relies. And this is what the Bush administration's own officialdom stated to the Washington Post. Five officials acknowledged that we allow and invite a friendly country to come in and to want someone that we grab. They put want in quotes. When we turn them over, the foreign government will charge them with a crime of some sort. An official, and this is again one of the officials of the Bush administration, who has direct involvement in these renditions, stated, I know they are going to be tortured. I do this with my eyes open, he said. The CIA's authoritative Directorate of Operations Instructions, drafted in cooperation with General Counsel in the field, acknowledges that torture by cooperating intelligence services from other countries is part of the standard operational procedure of the Central Intelligence Agency. So these are essentially contracting out the torture participants or perpetrators.
Now, in 1994, the United States ratified the Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman, or Degrading Treatment or Punishment. And in Article 3 of that convention, it states, quote, "No state party shall expel, return," the word is refouler, "or extradite a person to another state where there are substantial grounds for believing that he would be in danger of being subjected to torture." And in Article 4, it says, "Each state party shall ensure that all acts of torture are offenses under its criminal law." And let us note here that, as Ralph had mentioned, the State Department's own studies has shown that countries such as Jordan and Morocco do torture prisoners. So here, once again, it's the U.S. is ratifying treaties, which it immediately pays no attention to.
But actually, Maya, let's be very clear here, because we're focusing on the Washington Post expose. But this is a policy of every administration, Republican and Democratic, over a period of decades. If we recall the pretenses of Jimmy Carter about being interested in human rights, the Jimmy Carter presidency involved the use of the American ambassadors in Guatemala and Honduras and in El Salvador to literally provide the lists to the death squads, to Daubuisson, to the killer units that were funded by the Central Intelligence Agency. They provided the lists of those to be targeted, and the Washington Post article itself states the Clinton administration pioneered the use of extraordinary rendition. This is in 1998. And after the torture to death of these very individuals targeted by the Clinton administration was exposed, Clinton was forced to cut off funding with the director of Egypt's General Intelligence Services, whose torture of suspects had been actually stipulated and stated in the State Department's own human rights report. Now the Bush administration responds to the Washington Post as follows. "You can be sure," he said, this is a Bush administration official, "that we are not spending a lot of time on that now." And what he's referring to is any State Department designation of human rights abuses by these torturers of the U.S. ruling class.
So, in its understated way, while the Washington Post is exposing this torture, which they call duress, let's look at what the editors of the Post have to say. The next day, they noted that this was a, quote, "eye-opening report on the use of torture by the CIA, but all they went on to say is, quote, "If administration officials have decided that moderate physical pressure," no, they don't call it torture, they call it moderate physical pressure. And then they go on to say, "If they had decided that this moderate physical pressure, once an abuse, is now to be the norm in terrorism cases, the American people ought to know and ought to be able to respond through their representatives."
Maya, the Human Rights Watch response to this formal acknowledgement of the systematized and institutionalized use of torture by the United States authorities was as follows. "Torture is always prohibited under any circumstances," said Kenneth Roth, executive director of Human Rights Watch. "U.S. officials who take part in this torture, who authorize it, or even close their eyes to it, can and should be prosecuted by courts anywhere in the world," unquote. That puts me in mind, Maya, of our International Tribunal on United States War Crimes in Indochina, whose hearings were held in London in 1966, in Stockholm and in Paris in 1967, and in Tokyo, where we documented the sustained use of torture by the United States intelligence services, the physical liquidation of 50,000 people in Laos and in Cambodia by the Phoenix Program, by the Green Berets, by the Special Rangers, and the use of electric torture on those who were kidnapped by American forces across Indochina. And in particular, this brings to mind the talks I've been having over the past...
Ralph, before you do that, I would just want to interject something, because what you're going to go on to say is exceptionally important. But before we leave that's the subject of so-called international law, I'd like to mention that Ruth Wedgwood, who's a professor of law at Yale University, is the advisor to the Bush administration. And according to the Washington Post's Alan Cooperman in an article December 28th, he mentions that Ruth Wedgwood, the Yale professor of law, said that it was debatable whether the CIA techniques constitute torture under the UN definition of, quote, severe pain or suffering. And also, I'd like to mention, imagine this, a law professor saying that torture is in keeping with...
Well, that's Alan Dershowitz himself, the Mossad attorney and Harvard professor. I say Mossad because he has functioned as a Mossad operative quite explicitly and openly. In fact, was used for the interrogation of poets and writers, Palestinian poets and writers in prison, such as Falsia Asmar and others. But
now,
Dershowitz has openly called for the legitimizing of torture by the United States authorities.
Now, in Northern Ireland, the British forces have been notorious for using similar techniques of torture: the hooding, the forced standing, the deprivation of sleep, the subjection to noise, depriving people of food and drink. And in Northern Ireland, civil rights activists brought this before the European Court of Human Rights. But in 1978, the European Court of Human Rights ruled that the use by the British forces in Northern Ireland of these techniques was not torture. They said it was, quote, inhuman and degrading and illegal under other treaties, but they didn't consider it torture. Imagine that, a court not considering that torture is torture by any other name, right?
The bourgeois courts are a facade. They deploy protections in a very controlled and limited fashion. And what they do in the courts is violated in any event on the ground. We only have to look at the standard techniques that are used in the imprisonment of black and Latino youth in the United States, over 2 million of them. The euphemism called administrative segregation, or ADSEG, is the holding of people in solitary confinement, not for days, not for weeks, not for months, but for years. It puts me in mind of one of the people that we have been defending over the years through our Council on Human Needs, Tafawa Balogun, who was a young man, a boy of the age of 15, when he and his cousin, raised in the streets and projects of Newark, attempted to steal a loaf of Wonder Bread from a 13-year-old, got into a fight with the kid, and in the course of the fight, the cousin picked up a brick and hit the boy, and the boy died. Tafawa was not involved in the fatal assault. He went to the police. He brought the police to the body. He was sentenced to 30 years imprisonment. He spent 10 years in solitary confinement called administrative segregation, buried alive. Those of us who have been in prison, and I've been in a few of them, can testify to what it means. I've been in a box 3x4x5, and after 2 days you start to dissociate. After 3 days, you're talking to yourself and you're not sure who it is or from where the voice is coming. Weeks, months, years, you can't contain this torment. You can't maintain your sanity under such conditions. I can speak from personal experience as to what this means. And these are the methods, these are the standard treatment that these rulers mete out to hapless victims who they designate as terrorists. And for the most part, as example in Afghanistan, where the Taliban were taking farmers by force, an enforced conscription, not unlike that which was used in the Civil War in the United States, where they had to pay hundreds of dollars that nobody had in order to avoid conscription. And then when the U.S. invades Afghanistan, it's these farmers and these peasants who are being swept up and delivered into detention centers in closed boxes and freezing boxes and tortured to death. In the past weeks, Maya, as you know, I've been talking to a
Ralph, before we get into this, let us note that this is WBAI 99.5 FM, and this is New Year's Eve, and we hope you have a safe, healthy, and activist New Year. This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. This is 99.5 FM in New York, the tri-state region, and you can listen to us on the internet at www.wbai.org. We'd like you to contact us. Our voicemail is 212-209-2953. That's 212-209-2953. Or you can write to us at takingaim@pacbell.net. Ralph?
Well, Maya, during the time that we were having our tribunal hearings in the countries that I've mentioned, and they were followed up, I should mention, by citizens' commissions of inquiry in New York and across the United States, in which many GIs gave testimony, officers, enlisted men alike, described the torture that they were involved in inflicting, and the conditions where they themselves were in jeopardy if they refused such orders. They came forward, they documented this torment, this torture, as standard procedure. But in the past weeks, I've been having discussions with a doctor, and I'm not going to name him because he would still be in jeopardy, who was a Navy SEAL, and who participated in Operation Thunderbird. This is 1972 and 1973. And Operation Thunderbird involved the kidnapping of village leaders and anybody who could read or write in the villages across South Vietnam, where they were, as he said, wired up. They hooked them up to generators. They had clips on the genitalia and on any moist tissue. They were tortured with electricity. And if they didn't die under these conditions, and if they still hadn't talked, they brought in what were called the Kit Carson Scouts. I've taken now pages and pages of notes of the numbing torture to which the tens of thousands of peasants were subjected by these torture squads of the United States authorities in Vietnam and their special forces, from one end of South Vietnam to the other. Throughout the Mekong Delta, these were the standard operational procedures. This was Operation Thunderhead. If you go to the internet and you look up Operation Thunderhead, you'll see hundreds of pages describing the special forces without specifying the torture, which was their everyday activity. They went in and came out. Their victims didn't survive.
Without restraint, torture, assassination, and the lethal nature of class rule, now they're expecting us to consider this the commonplace operational procedure of the U.S. Throughout the world. Not that it's the exception, but this should be. That we should accept this as the modus operandi of U.S. Policy.
Modus operandi.
Now, after last February 1st, 2002, there was an eight-part series by Bob Woodward and Dan Baltz in the Washington Post, a series that tries to repaint, to reconfigure him as somebody who's really in command and control and is establishing U.S. policy.
As opposed to the Mortimer Snerd that he is, carrying out the instructions which are handed down to him from those who make policy.
And in the sixth part, buried within it, is some very important information about the the CIA, and that Director George Tenet had proposed an incredible expansive role for the CIA, much of which we have been talking about in terms of this torture and the intervention of the CIA's paramilitary teams, first in Afghanistan and then worldwide, for preemption of future attacks. And in keeping with this, the New York Times on December 14th revealed that Bush has widened the authority of the CIA to kill terrorists. And this was an article by James Risen and David Johnson. And it talked about the authorization to kill and a lethal force list. And specifically, 24 people were mentioned, aside from Osama bin Laden. And it gave the CIA, without having to go even to the president, as if it ever did, the permission, the authority to go, to kill, to capture, to do whatever it wanted to with specifically these people, but also, as we know, many others. And there had been an executive order banning assassinations specifically that was decreed in 1981, which says specifically in 2.11 of Executive Order 12333, which you can get on the internet, prohibition on assassination. No person employed by or acting on behalf of the United States government shall engage in or conspire to engage in assassination. Now, the Hindustan Times, after this was revealed on December 12th, wrote an editorial, quote, not so covert anymore. The CIA is no stranger to the shadowy realm of coups and assassinations. Typically, the CIA's targets have been from the Third World. Look at Patrice Lumumba, Salvador Allende, and Fidel Castro, to name a few, writes the Hindustan Times. It is noteworthy that the operations mounted in the past relied on deniability. Now brazenness is taking over. President George W. Bush has provided written legal authority to kill those on the lethal force list or the high-value target list without seeking fresh authorization each time. Since no court of law is likely to be sitting in judgment, it doesn't take much ingenuity to appreciate that any politically inconvenient figure can be eliminated without questions asked. And the Hindustan Times goes on to say that it refers to Executive Order 12333 banning assassinations, which Ronald Reagan had issued, and which had reinforced a ban that Gerald Ford had also issued, because there had been exposure of the CIA's plans to kill President Diem of South Vietnam. But now the Hindustan Times goes on to say, in June, President Bush reportedly signed an intelligence order directing the CIA to undertake a program to topple Mr. Hussein, referring to Saddam Hussein. So there, comments the Hindustan Times.
Well, the Hindustan Times is not alone in denoting what is taking place. The World Tribune on November 29th ran the article, in the wake of Predator success, and they're referring to the Predator aircraft that blew up the accused supporters of Al-Qaeda in Yemen. They just assassinated them by incinerating their car. And it says, the United States is quietly preparing assassination of Hezbollah sympathizers. Now, that's very instructive because Hezbollah is the resistance movement in Lebanon to the Israeli occupation there, and it is a movement that has the broadest support of the Shiite peasants and workers of South Vietnam because it was a resistance to the most brutal Israeli occupation. And what the U.S. is now, the World Tribune reports, preparing is the assassination of supporters of Hezbollah across Africa and the Middle East. And this, and the article states, the prospect of assassinating Hezbollah leaders was raised publicly during Senate Judiciary Committee hearings last week, a move supported by Committee Chairman Senator Arlen Specter and by U.S. Attorney Robert Conrad. The United States is moving against these people, Specter told Conrad. Would you recommend that for Hezbollah outside the United States, we continue with this campaign, including assassination? Yes, sir, Conrad replied. Yes, sir, the attorney of the United States government, the U.S. Attorney Robert Conrad, conversing with the chairman of the Judiciary Committee of the United States Senate. Yes, sir. We will assassinate supporters of Hezbollah. We will assassinate Palestinians who resist occupation in Lebanon. We will assassinate those who are opposed to the policies of predation of the Israeli government. Yes, sir. It's assassination across the board.
Ralph, what Bush has said is that he has not waived the executive order banning assassinations. Bush's officials have said that the presidential authority to kill so-called terrorists defines operatives as enemy combatants and thus legitimate targets for lethal force. Well, you will remember that the United States is also calling U.S. citizens enemy combatants. Now, we know of assassinations taking place in the United States. Aside from Martin Luther King, John F. Kennedy, we have Fred Hampton and other members of the Black Panthers and other groups, and also trade union leaders throughout the history of the trade union movement have been assassinated here in the United States, as well as various journalists.
In the immediate aftermath of the execution of John F. Kennedy, when we set up the Who Killed Kennedy Committee in London in 1964, there was an investigator with whom we worked closely in Texas. Penn Jones Jr., who wrote a four-volume book called Forgive My Grief. And what Penn did was he cited and documented the people who had been eliminated in the space of 18 months. I'm talking about people from every walk of life. They were doctors, they were cops, they were reporters, they were strippers, they were taxi cab drivers, they were housewives. They had nothing in common. Neither age, nor sex, nor employment, or life expectancy. There was only one common denominator, and that was they had a relationship to specific and material evidence bearing upon the execution of John F. Kennedy. They were dead. Within a space of 18 months, over 150 of them. Lloyd's of London at the time was asked to do an actuarial table on the odds against the random sampling of people, like you pick them off a bus in Berkeley or in New York. What are the odds against this random group of people being dead in a year and a half, every one of them? The odds were 100,000 trillion to one. The computer couldn't compute the odds. These are organized extermination of witnesses in the to crimes of the American ruling class. It was true for John F. Kennedy. It was true for Robert Kennedy. It was true for Martin Luther King. It was true for Malcolm X. It is the paradigm of ruling class governance today, without restraint, the lethal nature of class rule.
What the difference today is that before these were closed-door operations, and now what we have with lethal force lists being public policy, the U.S. population is being asked to accept this as the everyday open policy. This is a crossing the line.
Maya, right? Actually, in 1996, I did a piece called Official Murder and Capitalist Rule in America, The Continuing Dynamic. It was published, as you know, in Prevailing Winds, and it bore upon the role of the Central Intelligence Agency and U.S. rulers in the murder of Robert F. Kennedy, and in particular the application of a program called MK Ultra, a mind control program which had been surfaced in the Senate, the Church Committee hearings in 1975. But what's instructive about MK Ultra and then mind control is that, as the San Francisco Examiner detailed on September 2nd, 1977, the CIA's MKUltra mind control program, a program which included a study called Operation Artichoke, was designed to use methods of mind control to induce and to prepare programmed assassins who would assassinate on behalf of the intelligence agency without recollection afterwards of their instruction or sometimes even of their participation in the event. And one of the results of these inquiries and Operation Mind Control was the disclosure that Sirhan Sirhan had been not only a young intelligence operative, but had been systematically subjected to MK Ultra's mind control program, and that is well and meticulously documented. It's documented in the article in which that I've just mentioned to you. It's discussed by Bill Turner and his associate Christian in their book on the Robert Kennedy killing. They discussed the role of Dr. William Joseph Bryan Jr. in Los Angeles, a CIA consultant who engaged in experimentation with mind control and behavior modification. He developed his expertise during the Korean War as chief of all medical survival training for the United States Air Force, i.e. its brainwashing section. This is where the idea of the Manchurian Candidate emerged, and W.H. Boart, in his groundbreaking book, Operation Mind Control, elicited the case study documents of the Central Intelligence Agency and the Office of Naval Intelligence and other governmental agency programs undertaken for the purpose of conditioning subjects to become political assassins.
Ralph, could you spell his name in case people want to get a hold of the book?
W.H. Boart, B-O-W-A-R-T. In July 1975, the Sunday Times in London quoted a United States Navy psychologist who acknowledged that U.S. naval intelligence had taken convicted murderers from military prisons, conditioned them under MK Ultra as political assassins, and placed them in American embassies around the world, unquote. And Boart goes into this in detail. That particular citation from the Sunday Times is discussed by him on page 161. There are four specific chapters in the Boart book: A School for Assassins, The Face of the Zombie, The Lone Nuts, Another Hypnopatsy, and the documentation is meticulous. And it goes beyond that, because John Marks, who was co-author with Victor Marchetti of the CIA and the Cult of Intelligence, John Marks wrote a particularly important book on Artichoke and MK Ultra, and described at length the brainwashing of Dr. Hewin Cameron's protracted program of de-patterning, which is the euphemism for breaking up existing patterns of behavior in their subjects by means of particularly intensive, and I'm quoting, electric shocks combined with prolonged drug-induced sleep. This was a psychiatrist willing to wipe the human mind totally clean, and I'm quoting, creating a state in which a man who knew too much would be made to forget, or people who had long been targeted as objectives of Artichoke and MK Ultra programs. And the methods that were used by the Central Intelligence Agency under the direction of Dr. Hewin Cameron are as follows. Apart from hypnosis, these governmental programs were carried out over decades on human subjects. Quote, in standard professional electroshock, doctors gave the subject a single dose of 110 volts, lasting a fraction of a second, once a day or every other day. By contrast, Dr. Cameron used a form 20 to 40 times more intense, two or three times daily, with the power turned up to 150 volts. And I'm quoting, "The frequent screams that echoed through the hospital did not deter Cameron or his associates in their depatterning of their subjects completely." And the author, Martin Cannon, reached the same conclusion with similar findings in his study, The Controllers, Mind Control, and Project MK Ultra, which was published in 1994. Not unreasonably, having described the sustained programming to which living people had been subjected and the behaviors they had been induced to manifest unawares, led him to conclude a specter haunts the so-called democratic nations, the specter of technofascism. All the powers of the espionage empire and the scientific establishment have entered into an unholy alliance to evoke this specter. A mind is a terrible thing to waste and a worse thing to commandeer. This is the little acknowledged programming of people, torture of people, MK Ultra, mind control. For the past 35 years, it has been an instrument of policy of the torture state, the ruling class commands. It is now being applied across the board without restraint, without dissembling, without the even little effort to cover up this torment. It is the policy of the rulers of the United States, and it is being inflicted on people across the world, and indeed within this country itself.
Aside from the Boart book, Project MK Ultra, the CIA's program of research in behavioral modification, there was a Senate Select Committee, and you can read the documents on the internet. And Appendix A, the testing and use of chemical and biological agents by the intelligence community, it's available at www.parascope.com/ds/documents library, and then it goes on. But if you start there, you'll be able to get it, or go to Google and look for MK Ultra, the actual documents. Now, we're approaching the new year, and as you know, there are going to be large anti-war demonstrations taking place over the Martin Luther King birthday weekend. But as well, I'd like you to look at the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. That's www.bordc.org. On December 17th, the Oakland City Council became the 20th city, and actually there are now 21 cities that have passed resolutions stating that they oppose the U.S. Patriot Act on the grounds that it violates civil rights. Because as well as without restraint, torture, assassination, and the lethal nature of class rule abroad, we know with the institution of the Patriot Act, the Homeland Security, and the development of the Northern Command, which we'll go into more next week, that what they are preparing for is same martial law, use of torture and assassination here in the United States. Now, the city of Oakland, in its resolution, has stated that it will not cooperate in investigations, interrogations, or arrests of people whose civil rights have been violated under the federal act, under the U.S. Patriot Act and the other laws. So if you go to the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, which is a group that started in, is it New Hampshire? Or I think it's New Hampshire. They have the resolutions that have been passed in the various cities, and they also have a sample resolution that you can use in your own community. It started in Northampton, Massachusetts. Now, this is something that you can do, you and your friends and your neighbors and your organizations and in your unions, in your place of work. Ralph?
Well, actually, Maya, what you're describing, the resistance on the part of cities across the United States, has particular timeliness and importance in this coming new year. The Los Angeles Times on October 27th, in the article by William M. Arkin, a defense intelligence agency analyst and figure, described the secret war, the Defense Department dramatically expanding its black world of covert operations. The epicenter remains the North Carolina Joint Special Operations Command, but there's one particular aspect of this important report which we will detail in a further program that I want to mention before we conclude today, because the Defense Science Board of Donald Rumsfeld, what they call Rumsfeld's Influential Defense Science Board 2002, has prepared what it calls Proactive Preemptive Operations Group, P2OG, which brings together the Central Intelligence Agency and military covert action, information warfare, intelligence, cover, and deception. And the article in the Los Angeles Times documents that this body will launch secret operations aimed at, quote, and listen to this carefully, stimulating reactions amongst terrorists and states possessing weapons of mass destruction and prodding these terrorist cells into action. They will indeed induce the state subs and substate actors to carry out operations which will then provide the opportunity for attacks by U.S. forces. Do you understand what this is? This is the smoking gun, brothers and sisters. Rumsfeld and these people are carrying out provocateur operations which are designated as terrorist operations to provide the rationale and the pretext and the cover for massive U.S. military response. This is the signature of 9/11. This is the predicate for the new attacks which we can expect involving smallpox that will bring into play the Northern Command, which will bring military rule to the United States. I say these things not to alarm. I say these things to present the reality. This is the smoking gun exposure of the real nature of this ruling class. Let us prepare that resistance, city across city, union to union, working class resistance at the point of production, mass mobilizations against the permanent war. It is a state that oppresses us. It is a state of terror. It is lethal. It is without restraint. It is our responsibility to mobilize now and make this new year one of resistance, brothers and sisters, to the rule of our ruthless ruling class.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Shumman
and Maya Schoen.
They got out of here just before giving the contact information. If you'd like to get in touch with them at Taking Aim, Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. Their telephone number is 707-552-9995. Or you can contact them on the internet at takingaim@pacbell.net. This is WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM. You can contact us on the web at WBAI.org. A couple of program notes, looking for various and sundry carts.